Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, February 15th, 2018. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Students, Drivers Injured in School Bus Rollover Crash with Car, by Julia Evelsizer. Bloomington. Three students and the drivers of a McLean County Unit 5 school bus and a car were injured when a bus collided with a car and overturned Wednesday afternoon on US 150 at Abraham Road between Bloomington and Downs. A Unit 5 school bus carrying students from Evans Junior High School collided with the car about 4 p.m. and rolled on its side. Unit 5 officials said 47 children were on board. Multiple children were transported to local area hospitals with minor injuries sustained during the crash, Illinois State Police said in a news release. Three students and the bus driver were taken to hospitals, said Unit 5 officials. The driver of the car also was injured, according to initial reports from police at the scene, but additional information was not available. State police, who handled the accident because it happened on a U.S. highway, said Wednesday night the accident remained under investigation and did not release additional information. Unit 5 officials said their initial reports show the bus driver was not at fault. Students were examined at the scene by first responders, and those who were not injured were taken by another Unit 5 bus back to Evans, which is on US 150 about half a mile northwest of the crash scene. Parents were told to gather there to pick up their children. Andrea Smiley was at the school after the accident to pick up her nephew, a student who was on the bus when it crashed. My sister called me and said there was an accident, but that my nephew wasn't hurt. The school handled everything well, said Smiley. Unit 5 attorney Kurt Richardson was also at the school as students were bused back to the building. Students returning to the school were shaken up, as one would guess. We had a few students request ice packs for bumps and bruises, he said. Richardson said school officials will be available Thursday to speak with students affected by the crash. We touched base with all the parents who had students with minor injuries, and they're doing well. We feel very blessed. There are lessons to be learned through this, and things will do better in the future. But all students were accounted for and reunited with their families, said Richardson. Officers from the McLean County Sheriff's Department and the Bloomington, Hayworth, and Leroy Police Departments, and ambulances from several area fire departments also were at the scene. A second, unrelated school bus accident also was reported on Old Peoria Road west of Bloomington shortly before the US 150 crash, said the McLean County Sheriff's Department. Officers confirmed that bus went into the ditch, but students had exited the bus and no injuries were reported. The school district connected to the bus is unknown. Visibility at the time was hampered by thick fog. A National Weather Service dense fog advisory remains in effect for the northern half of Illinois until 10 a.m. Thursday, but the NWS forecast cautions that areas of dense fog may remain in central Illinois until 3 p.m. The next story is headlined, Service Agencies Worried. Area health providers say reducing program funding detrimental, by Paul Sweech. Bloomington. Health and Human Services providers in central Illinois were concerned Wednesday that Governor Bruce Rauner's proposed budget calls for cuts to Medicaid and other programs, ranging from child care to substance abuse intervention. Illinois is already ranked as the lowest in per-patient spending on Medicaid, and this proposal will only make matters worse, said Chris Manson, Vice President of Government Relations for OSF Healthcare. We also understand that this proposal is only the beginning of a lengthy budget process. Ricky Lee Beneke, Advocacy and Advancement Director for Life Center for Independent Living, said, We are very concerned with the proposed cuts to numerous disability-related programs and Medicaid, all of which would be detrimental to people with disabilities. We encourage the General Assembly to work on a bipartisan agreement that does not harm people with disabilities, but instead strengthens home and community-based services. Jim Runyon, Executive Vice President of Easter Seals Central Illinois, was pleased that the proposed budget calls for $3 million more in early intervention funding for services that include early childhood occupational, physical, speech, and developmental therapy. But Runyon was disappointed that the proposed budget calls for a 7.5% reduction in the autism program. Easter Seals and Illinois State University are among recipients of that money for autism diagnostics, resource centers, and parental training. Lisa Pieper, Regional Vice President with Children's Home Plus Aid, noted that Rauner mentioned jobs and education more than 20 times in his budget address, but investments in human services, such as child care, coaching first-time parents, mental health, and after-school programs are just as important, she said. The budget proposal calls for a cut in Illinois' contribution to the Child Care Assistance Program, CCAP, by more than 20%, Pieper said. The program provides subsidies for child care for low-income parents who are working or in school, and the program has been successful, she said. In Bloomington, Children's Home Plus Aid serves more than 180 children of low-income working and in-school parents at Scott Early Learning Center. Any cuts to the CCAP program would be devastating to families, forcing many to quit their jobs or drop out of school, Pieper said. But she applauded the governor favoring investment in the Department of Children and Family Services Intact Family Services Program. Chestnut Health Systems CEO Dave Sherrar said, "The suggestion by the governor that the number of individuals who can avail themselves of substance use disorder and mental health services should be reduced flies in the face of public needs that are so clearly evidenced by the opiate crisis in every part of Illinois." And here is another story reacting to the governor's budget speech entitled, "Pension Shift Weighs on Educators. Short Timeline for Schools to Take on Cost Devastating," by Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. Under the budget plan announced by Governor Bruce Rauner on Wednesday, school districts and public community colleges and universities would have to pick up pension costs currently covered by the state. It's an idea that's been discussed in various forms for a few years, so it wasn't entirely a surprise. Under Rauner's plan, the pension shift would be phased in over 4 years. "That is a lot faster than they had been talking about in the past," said Bloomington District 87 Superintendent Barry Riley. "That would be devastating to try to take that on that short amount of time." Riley said the cost shift over 4 years would be more than $6 million for his district, not including future costs after that. Neither Illinois State University nor Heartland Community College had figures immediately available on what the impact of the cost shift would be. Universities also would have to pick up their health care costs. Rauner said this would be offset by an additional $205 million in appropriations in fiscal 2019 and other tools. But Riley said he hasn't seen what those tools would be and whether it would be enough to offset the added cost. "That's essentially a cut in our appropriations," said ISU President Larry Dietz. "It wasn't any of the universities that put the pension system in place. It was the state." Both Dietz and Heartland President Rob Widmer noted it is still early in the budget process. "The odds of any governor's budget proposal being the final product is not how it works," said Widmer. "If a shift in pension costs is approved," he said, "certainly the longer we would have to cope and adjust, the better." Rauner said, "Our administration is an emphatic advocate for education investment." He said the structural reforms included in his proposal would enable the state to spend a record $8.3 billion on pre-K-12 education, That includes $350 million of new money distributed through our more equitable funding formula. There was some good news for public colleges and universities in Rauner's remarks. Calling for making higher education a priority, Rauner said, "This year, we bring an end to budget reductions for our university and community college systems." The state's monetary award program, which provides grants to college students based on financial need, would be funded at fiscal 2018 levels, with an eye toward increasing funding in the future, Rauner said. Rauner's budget calls for adding $100 million in capital funds to address deferred maintenance on college campuses. Dietz said ISU has a backlog of about $500 million in deferred maintenance. Political observers see Rauner's proposal as a starting point. "We obviously care about the dollar amount, but stability of funding and a dollar amount we could plan around would take some of the anxiety out," Dietz said. Both Dietz and Widmer expressed hope that a budget agreement is reached before the fiscal year begins, rather than more delayed or partial year budgets. The next story is entitled, "District 87 OKs Bid for BHS Work," by Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. The Bloomington District 87 School Board accepted the low bid of Petri Kuhn Company of Champaign for renovation of the Bloomington High School Orchestra and Choir Room. The total cost, including contingency allowance and professional fees, was $674,576. That is $74,056 more than what was originally allocated for the project. However, the higher cost was mainly because the project was expanded to include the addition of sprinklers to the area and renovation of an adjacent hallway. The renovations are part of a larger project of improvements to the Bloomington High School campus. Superintendent Barry Riley said that although the cost for this particular project was more than the original estimate, it still fits within the overall cost of the entire project. He said the district saw it as an opportunity within the scope of the project to add sprinklers. The board also approved a request for authorization to use health life safety funds to make repairs to floors at Bend Elementary School. The request will be forwarded to the Regional Office of Education. An inspection found cracks in the floor slab at the school, which was built in 1922. Although it is not an immediate danger, it is something that should be taken care of in the next 2 to 3 years, board members were told. The estimated cost of the repairs, which will include asbestos abatement, is $420,000. 8 classrooms are affected. In other action, the board approved a calendar for the 2018-19 school year. The first day of classes will be August 20th. The last day of classes will be May 23rd, 2019, as long as there is no bad weather that would require use of emergency days. Graduation will be May 26th, 2019. The board heard from Riley about the response to a fire on Gettysburg Drive on Saturday that displaced several families with children who attend Stevenson Elementary School and Bloomington Junior High School. Riley said there was a great showing of community support with an abundance of clothing, toiletries, toys, and other items donated. In addition, donations of cash and gift cards will result in more than $1,000 going to each family, he said. And here's another local education story entitled, "Unit 5 Board Reflects on Student Safety," by Julia Evelsizer. Normal. Before discussing Business District Wednesday, McLean County Unit 5 School Board members took a moment to appreciate the health and safety of their students. Board President Jim Hayek asked the board and meeting attendees to take a moment of silence to honor the victims of a deadly school shooting Wednesday in Florida. News of the shooting came just hours before a Unit 5 bus carrying 47 Evans Junior High School students was involved in a rollover crash. Three students and the bus driver suffered minor injuries, and the driver of a car that collided with the bus also reportedly was injured. "For what we see in the world around us, we take every accident very seriously," said Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel. "We thank our lucky stars the students involved in the crash are now home with their parents. We were very fortunate." On the agenda was the first draft of the 2018-19 school calendar presented by Ray Epperson, Unit 5 Deputy Superintendent. The 2018-19 draft calendar submitted very closely mirrors this year's calendar, with a couple of exceptions, said Epperson. "The most notable change is the consolidation of parent-teacher conferences for multiple days down to one day, October 19th. Students will not have class on the conference day." Epperson said a majority of school employees surveyed said they would prefer a one-day conference and the switch would be more convenient for parents. "We heard examples of parents who have several elementary students and had to go to conferences multiple times throughout 4 days because each grade level chose a different day to meet," he said. Epperson said the conference date was also moved up in the school year so parents and teachers could address any concerns sooner. The board also approved a resolution to join a purchasing cooperative to comply with new U.S. Department of Agriculture purchasing guidelines for school breakfast and lunch programs. Currently, there are 104 districts joining the co-op with an approximate total enrollment of 171,000 students, said Marty Hickman, Unit 5 Business Manager. Items purchased through the cooperative will be food and supplies for the Unit 5 Breakfast and Lunch Program, including canned and frozen fruits and vegetables, deli meats and cheese, frozen entrees and bread items, juice, dressings, sauces, grains, and disposable supplies. Milk and bread will continue to be bid separately. The next story is entitled, IWU Unveils King Bust, 1807 Abolitionist Book, also on display at University's Library, by Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. On the anniversary of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s first visit to Illinois Wesleyan University, the school unveiled a bust of the civil rights leader Wednesday in the rotunda of Ames Library. At the same time, IWU officials also displayed a first edition book, A Letter on the Abolition of the Slave Trade, written in 1807 by British abolitionist William Wilberforce. The bust was donated by the sculptors Jeffrey and Anna Coe Varilla, whose works include Tribute to Freedom at Soldier Field in Chicago, Adelor the Lion at Chicago's Lincoln Park Zoo, and two statues of King, one at the University of Texas in Austin and the other in Roanoke, Virginia. The bust is based on the sculpture they did for the University of Texas. Anna Coe Varilla said IWU had been very good to her son, Adam, a senior majoring in finance, and she and her husband decided IWU would be a good home for the bust. IWU President Eric Jensen said the bust will be a visible and constant reminder to everyone who walks past just how strong the university's commitment to diversity and social justice really is. King first spoke at IWU on February 14, 1961, and returned in 1966. As part of the observance of Black History Month, a collection of photos, newspaper articles, and other items from King's 1961 visit also are on display in the rotunda. The Wilberforce book was obtained for IWU's Tate Archives and Special Collections at a discount through the Normal-based nonprofit organization Books to Benefit. Mary Ryder of Books to Benefit, a retired Illinois State University literature professor, recognized the book was from the early 19th century as she was going through a collection of 7,000 donated books. The group collects and resells books to support literacy programs. "Rather than sell it to a rare book collector, we wanted to put it in an academic collection where it would be used, appreciated, and kept in an archival environment, she said. We were delighted to reach an agreement with Illinois Wesleyan because of the social justice emphasis at the university. The book was displayed Wednesday with other prominent abolitionist texts from IWU's collection, including a first edition copy of Harriet Beecher Stowe's Key to Uncle Tom's Cabin, and writings of Frederick Douglass and John Wesley, the father of Methodism. Meg Miner, university archivist and special collections librarian, said there was an underlying theme of letters among the material. "Letters are intensely personal from me to you," she said, "but with these letters there is also a political us-to-them message." She compared the 19th century material to King's Letters from Birmingham Jail. The next article is headlined, "Appeal Denied in Snow Murder Case," by Edith Brady Lunny. Chicago. Jamie Snow's latest appeal on his murder conviction in the 1991 death of a Bloomington gas station worker has been rejected by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. Snow is serving a life sentence in the shooting death of Bill Little, who was killed during an apparent robbery at the former Clark Oil Station at Linden and Empire Streets on Bloomington's east side. Snow was arrested in 1999 on murder charges. The recent denial of Snow's federal petition follows similar denial of his claims by judges in McLean County and the state's 4th District Appellate Court in Springfield. The Illinois Supreme Court declined to hear the case. McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers said the case has been reviewed dozens of times in state and federal courts. Every single time, including this 3-judge panel, the determination has been that there was nothing sufficient to cast aside the verdict reached by 12 jurors in McLean County who heard the substantial evidence, including testimony from about a dozen witnesses, that the defendant implicated himself in the crime, said Chambers. Still to be resolved in McLean County Circuit Court are issues involving possible forensic tests requested by the defense on evidence in Snow's case, said First Assistant State's Attorney Adam Grist. Despite each ruling upholding this conviction, the defense continues to file motions, and our office and McLean County taxpayers continue to expend more resources. At some point, people have to ask, when does it end? Said Grist. Snow's lawyer, Tara Thompson, with the Chicago-based Exoneration Project, said his legal team believes in Jamie Snow's innocence, and we plan to appeal the decision to the United States Supreme Court. We continue to investigate and litigate his case, and we believe that one day the truth will come out about who really killed Bill Little. Thompson asked that anyone with information about the case contact her. The Seventh Circuit judges concluded that Snow failed to produce sufficient evidence that his trial lawyer, Frank Pickle, was ineffective legal counsel. Pickle was disbarred in 2006 after he pleaded guilty to financial exploitation of an elderly person. Pickle's background included mental illness, a gambling addiction, and alcoholism, dating back to at least 2001, noted the federal panel, but no specific incident involving Pickle's issues was tied to Snow's trial. Snow's ongoing efforts to convince a reviewing court that witnesses at his trial lied about his involvement in Little's deaths gained no traction with the Seventh Circuit judges. Inconsistencies in witness statements were challenged by the defense during the trial, the judges concluded, and the credibility of their testimony was an issue for the jury. Snow's lawyers with the Exoneration Project have argued that Snow's lawyer was not told about consideration given to state witnesses by police and prosecutors in exchange for their testimony. And here's a story entitled, "Silva Stepping Down from Post, Finance Director to Shift to Chief Accounting Role," by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Bloomington Finance Director Patty Lynn Silva is stepping down, but she isn't going far away. Last month, Silva approached interim city manager Steve Rasmussen and proposed she transition to the city's chief accounting position due to personal reasons, said Rasmussen. Silva told the Pantograph that she wanted to step down so she could create a better balance between her personal life and career. It was my decision 100%. This was a tough decision to make, but I've made peace with it, said Silva. I think it's the stress level for me and me wanting to be home more. I think it's time for me to be on a bench for a little bit. I thought this could be an opportunity for me to still be here, and I enjoy what I do. They can tap me off the bench when they need me. She will fill the position that's been vacant since Paulette Hurd retired in June. The chief accountant's position is a more narrow focus. It would allow me to still do what I love, municipal finance, and also be home more and be more present in the lives of my family. Patty Lynn has done amazing work for the city and helped oversee a number of improvements to the city's financial operations, said Rasmussen. Silva was hired as city finance director in May 2012. I'm extremely proud of the time I have spent working with the council and the work that has been accomplished over the last 5 years, said Silva. Silva's current salary is $134,350. Her new salary and compensation has not been finalized, but an adjustment is anticipated, said Bloomington Communication Director Nora Dukowitz. Silva will report to the new finance director. My thought is the city may have to get an interim finance director for a bit, said Silva. It makes sense to me that they might not want to fill it until they have a new city manager, because that's a pretty key administrative position. Rasmussen said there is no set timeline for when Silva will transition to her new position. It will not impact the current budget cycle or preparation, he added. Rasmussen is slated to present to the council a proposed balanced budget on February 26th for the city's fiscal year that begins May 1st. And here's an item entitled, Evans Students Win Math Counts Contest, by Pantograph staff. Normal. A team of middle school students from Evans Junior High School in Bloomington have won the local area Math Counts competition. The top individual was Ved Kamalapati from Chittick's Junior High School, Normal. Members of Evans' winning team are Siddharth Boompelli, Tapaswini Kodavanti, Srinija Dagavolu, and Rohit Guha, under the direction of Coach Yu Weijin. The team will now advance to the state competition to be held in Lille on March 3rd. The second-place team members from Bloomington Junior High School are Hunter Pasola, Elijah Lewis, Priya Joshi, and Rajuta Durwas, under the direction of Coach Deborah Voorhees. The third-place team members from Chittick's Junior High School are Kamalapati, Aditya Sathyamurthy, Shridip Gadad, and Claire Campbell, under the direction of Coach Betsy Myers. In addition, the top two individuals not already on a team advancing to the state competition are Kamalapati and Basola. Both will also advance to the state competition. Math Counts is a national math enrichment, coaching, and competition program designed to improve math skills among U.S. students. Leadership at the local level of the Math Counts competition series is provided by members of the Bloomington Area Chapter of the Illinois Society of Professional Engineers. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for February 15th. Please stay tuned.